Welcome back in. Final hour. Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5, 106.3. The game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Hope everybody's doing well. We're taking your thoughts on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. The Nashville Predators in action. Their regular season beginning tomorrow over in Prague. They'll take on the San Jose Sharks tomorrow and once again on Saturday as well before coming back over to the United States to begin the home portion of their schedule next week with their home opener coming against the Dallas Stars. But two regular season games to kick off the NHL season for the Predators over the course of the next couple of days on Friday and Saturday in Prague. And we had Gentry Estes from the Tennessean on earlier in the show. It's been an interesting trip for the Predators. You get the really cool experience in Switzerland for Roman Josi and Nino Niederreiter going back home. And Niederreiter and Josi both playing well in the game. Josi scored two goals, and now you transition over to Prague and kind of get in that regular season mindset if you're the Predators. And there is a lineup decision that looks like it's going to happen that is pretty interesting as the Predators head into this regular season game against San Jose. Now, they're on the ice right now as we speak, practicing over in Prague. But, Joe, the last week or so, you look at the lineup for the Predators, and in the top six, along with Ryan Johansson and Nino Niederreiter, it's been Kiefer Sherwood that's played in the top six. It has not been Philip Tomasino. And as you look through the game the other day in Switzerland, Tomasino didn't play in that game, and it's not necessarily a direct correlation to what we're going to see coming up on Friday as they begin regular season play. But at this point, I'd be surprised, certainly surprised, if he's in the top six. And, Joe, I think there's a chance that we begin play tomorrow here with the Predators, and Philip Tomasino may not be in the lineup. What do you make of what's going on right now between Tomasino and the Nashville Predators?
Well, I'm puzzled by it. I'm surprised. Don't want to overreact. And you know, Willie from Prague yesterday had good points on Chase, you know, Willie and D-Mace about the fact that look, if you're this coaching staff, you got to genuinely go with information that's in front of you based on how people are performing during camp. And even though, I mean, I know I penciled in Tomasino next to Johansson and Niederreiter, they'll probably give that line a good look, keep the top line together, and if maybe they'll have a much better second line. You know, obviously that's not the case. I've wondered if maybe there's some kind of minor injury plaguing Tomasino. If not, I would say, I think it's fair to say it's disappointing. If he's healthy, I think it's fair to say that it's disappointing right now that he would not be in that spot. And I mean, it's possible that he won't be in the lineup tomorrow. I mean, we'll see, right? I think that would definitely be disappointing. It's not the end of the world. He's 21. But the Preds do need we've had that sentence I just said. How many times have we said that in recent years about other guys? Still very young. Let's remember how young Ellie Tolvanen is. Dante Fabro got thrown into things in 2019, fresh out of college. He's very young. But you know, now you look at those two guys, and they're both looking at reduced roles this year. Like they got opportunities last year to prove that they could be in these very significant spots in the lineup, and they didn't do well enough. So you really hope that doesn't turn out the same way with Tomasino. It is early,
but I think it is disappointing from the standpoint of you need somebody to come in and take hold of that role. And look, you know, I've watched Kiefer Sherwood in camp. I think he's looked good. He's been fine in training camp. But the reality is you're talking about a guy that's 27 years old, has played in 87 career NHL games, and has 7 goals and 18 points during that time. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't late bloomers in the NHL, and I think this would certainly qualify as a very late bloomer if this is the case for Kiefer Sherwood. He did have 36 goals in 57 games last year in the American Hockey League, 75 points. It's by far the most productive year he's ever had at any level, and I'm including the USHL in that as well. So it was kind of out of nowhere last year from Kiefer Sherwood, so maybe they found something here and something has clicked. But it's difficult for me to believe like Kiefer Sherwood is there going to be their answer at top six as they move forward. So, I mean, I said this earlier. I wouldn't panic if you're a Predators fan. You know, Cody Glass made the team. He was on the team for the first two games last season, and then he played about the next 65 in Milwaukee. So, you know, things can change pretty quickly early in a season. But I do think you're right in that it's fair to be disappointed that right from the jump, doesn't seem like they feel like Tomasino is ready to go in a top six role. Now, can he get there? Why is that the case? What's going on? You know, can you get him to come along a little bit quicker as the season gets rolling here? Maybe so, but if it's not going to be him to start the season, maybe it is Kiefer Sherwood to begin the season. I don't know how long-term of a solution that's going to be. So you got to find somebody. Like I said it yesterday, and I feel good about it. I feel pretty good about five of the top six all year being in a role, and that role being pretty firmly entrenched. Like Johansson, Niederreiter, Forsberg, Granlund, Duchesne are all going to be top six players, and they all need to be in that role. Who is going to be the next guy that steps up? I still think as I look at the roster, Tomasino is the one that makes the most sense, but he's got to find his way onto the ice and earn it. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's because he's not playing away from the puck the way they want him to. I say this, they started with that line together, Niederreiter, Johansson, and Tomasino to begin camp. I didn't think they were very good in the first preseason game that they played together, and Ryan Johansson kind of echoed that in his post-game press conference after that. And maybe John Hines just didn't like what he was seeing there. I don't know. But at some point, I think John Hines is going to have to go back to it with Tomasino. And I think he will.
Yeah, and look, good for Kiefer Sherwood for playing the way he has to get that opportunity. But I think there's enough of a sample size on him that, like, you know, you're not going to get a ton of offense. Now, last year, Luke Cunning gave no offense. And he was in that lineup, you know, and he was in that role a fair amount too. So, I mean, defensive, you know, responsibility / physicality, like obviously John Hines very much values that, right? But it would be very good for this team to actually have another offensive threat line. I do wonder if this is how it's going to be in Tomasino, you know, long-term, like they're not sure about him or he's just whatever. They want him somewhere else. They want him on that fourth line and whatever it might be. I guess I would reopen my mind to the idea of Janot moving around. We've both talked about how the herd line staying together would be the preference, the obvious preference, right? But if it's long-term, if this isn't just some beginning of the season thing, that Janot might actually get a more significant look up there.
I mean, I did not anticipate, Joe, that we'd be talking about heading into the regular season, potentially Cody Glass being a little bit more entrenched in a spot than Philip Tomasino is. But it kind of feels like that's the case right now. Like I feel pretty strongly Cody Glass is going to play. He's probably going to get some power play time tomorrow, too.
Yeah. No, and that's a great story, too. And, you know, so good for him. I mean, he's a talented young player. And a different situation because, obviously, he had, the knee and everything like that. But, no, I never would have guessed that. So, it's interesting. We were texting yesterday about, power play, too. You know, what is Glass, Tomasino, what are they going to do with that? And the fact that Glass has done what he's done tells you he had probably exactly the offseason the Preds wanted. Does this tell us that Tomasino didn't? I don't want to jump to that conclusion and say for sure that's what I think, but he was in the lineup all year last year, so he knows who John Hines is as a coach, what he expects. They have those exit interviews, come back, this, and let's go. And the Preds certainly had to be thinking Tomasino in that role, right?
You would think so. I mean, it makes by far to me the most sense on paper of having Tomasino there. And like I said, I still think moving forward it does too. I still think he's got the most ability. But, you know, if he's not putting it on display in training camp, then, you know, John Hines has proven that you got to earn it when you're out there. I mean, we talked about Matt Duchene a couple years ago. He couldn't find his way on the power play in the playoff series, and that's kind of incredible to think about, given how productive he was on the power play a year ago. So it can change very quickly, and quite frankly, I anticipate that it probably will change very quickly with Philip Tomasino here as they move forward, but I think it's certainly noteworthy that they're beginning the season, and it looks like that he's not going to be on the top six, and looks like there's a chance he might not be in the lineup at all. We'll take your thoughts on the Predators, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. More on that coming up next. We'll get back in the Titans coming up at 7:30 as well. All that on the table at 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Join me this Saturday at Broadway Brewhouse downtown at 317 Broadway for the SEC Game of the Week presented by BettingHero.com. They're going to help you enjoy your experience betting on mobile and may even buy you a beer. The fun starts at 2:30 Saturday, and it's Auburn versus Georgia.
Big one coming up between Auburn and Georgia. You know, Joe, we made fun of the Auburn-Georgia game a couple weeks ago being on CBS. I will say I'm a little bit more intrigued after watching Georgia on Saturday struggle around with Kent State and then Missouri. That's been a great couple of weeks for Georgia, which makes me think that maybe it'll be a rude awakening for Auburn coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, actually, I think that it's probably just going to be really, maybe even uglier because of this.
Maybe so.
We'll see.
Hey, Brian Harsin, he's coaching them up down there at Auburn, so we'll see what happens on that front. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Looking ahead to the Preds and the Sharks tomorrow. Preds beginning the regular season. They have wrapped up practice. Looks like the Sharks are about to take part in practice over in Prague in the Czech Republic, and the real thing getting going tomorrow for the Nashville Predators. We've discussed the Philip Tomasino part of this. The other interesting part of this to me, Joe, is it looks like Tomasino is not going to be in the top six. And also, it's not like they've gone to Ellie Tolvanen either. Like, if it's Kiefer Sherwood heading tomorrow, you know, the two guys we keep talking about, obviously Tomasino has been the number one guy. But there have been people that think about, okay, well, what about Ellie Tolvanen with Niederreiter and Johansson? Maybe he deserves another look there in the top six. It doesn't look like the Predators are going that route either. So, like, the two most likely candidates of that other top six forward, it seems like the Predators are steering clear of to begin the season.
Yeah, and again, it's not what you want. Look, maybe Tolvanen in this year catches fire and he changes his path, but it looks like it's headed toward, you know, kind of a guy who can hang in the league and I still think can be an asset, you know, with the man advantage, but not what he was drafted to be. Now, again, I'm not at all going there with Tomasino, regardless of this situation.
No.
That's not fair. It's not, and I don't think it's accurate. But it's just not something you like to see, you know? If you're a Preds fan, or if you're the Preds, you want this to be a slam dunk. Yep, there he goes. He's ready for his top six opportunity. He did a good job last year. We weren't sure he was going to be on, you know, the Preds roster all year in play. He did, and I thought he did a lot of good things. You know, you want this to change relatively quickly, because if you look at this team, if you ranked like top players on this roster right now, most of the top ones, as you go down the list, you know, for example, Niederreiter just turned 30. Most of them are right around 30,
yep,
early 30s, late 20s. You got to have some of these guys, you know, like go back 6 years when it's like, whoa, Victor Arvidsson is becoming a stud, you know, like that. I'm not saying I expected Tomasino this year to be Arvidsson then, but that's kind of like about that point of your career where you're like, oh, look at this guy take off. They need some stories like that. They did get one last year with Janot, you should be pointed out, and that's a great development, but they need more of them.
Go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Steven from Smyrna. Steven, thanks for calling in.
Hey, I just wanted to ask, so I just started getting into hockey late last year and was just wondering, who are the players on the Predators, the up-and-coming young players, or maybe newcomers that are really good or going to be really good in y'all's mind. And appreciate the show. I'll hang up and listen.
Hey, thanks for the call, Steven. And Joe, to your point, that's kind of the interesting spot that they're in right now, because they drafted Tolvanen to be that guy. They've drafted Tomasino to be that guy. And again, Tomasino's 21. I thought he was pretty impressive last year for what he did. So by no means am I like pulling the plug on Philip Tomasino. I think he's going to be fine as they move forward here. So he's on the list. You know, some of the more intriguing guys aren't quite here yet. You know, Askarov, the goalie, Evangelista, I thought had a pretty good camp. He's not NHL ready yet, but
there's big hopes for him.
I think, yeah, you know, he's a guy that could be maybe ready at some point this year. If not, certainly maybe a guy that could be ready next year. I mean, you've got Svechkov, who you took in the first round last year. You've got Zach LaRue, who you took in the first round last year. You know, obviously, Joachim Kimmel, who you took in the first round this year. I mean, they've got some guys at forward that are, I think, really intriguing as they move forward here. Joe, the interesting thing to me is, for a lot of the Predators' history, they've always kind of had what you thought could be that next up-and-coming guy on defense. And I'm looking through their pipeline right now. They really don't have that guy. I mean, they've got a couple of defensive prospects that I think might be okay. Like, they might end up making the league and being good players. But there's nobody they've got right now in their prospect pool where I think to myself, that's got the chance to be the next guy as a defenseman. And they basically had, like, the next guy since 2004 is basically when they've had the next guy. They've been a defenseman factory, and it's kind of weird that they're not right now.
Yeah, well, is it because, like, internally it's like, guys, we got to start finding more forwards? I don't know. I mean, you got to find everything, right?
Yeah.
And they've been incredibly good at finding goalies. I mean, especially if Askarov is what it looks like he may be. My gosh, what a run. And that's how you keep yourself, like, competitive through ups and downs of other things. But it's a great point by you. Like go back. They had the next guy and the next guy and the next guy next to each other, right,
yep,
for a while. And it's like, okay, well, you know, we'll make this move for, you know, we'll send Seth Jones up for Johansson, because it's like he can't even crack the top four. So now that's not great. And the thing, so go back to something you just said. You said, you know, you think Tomasino will be fine, and I would agree. But my question would be, what is that? Like what is fine? What's his ceiling? Like, how good? I hate to bring in the ceiling, because then it's like, you know, like, what was it? Oh no, Forsberg is Tolvanen's floor. Is that what it was?
Yes.
Yeah. But what is, like, how good could Tomasino be in the NHL?
Look, it's a great question. I don't think that he's like an elite finisher or anything like that. I'd be surprised if we're talking about him, you know, as a 40 goal scorer at any point. I've always kind of viewed him as like a 60, 65 point guy, like at his top end, which is fine. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's a good top six forward. I don't think that he is like an elite prospect or anything. I think he's really good, and I think he's got a chance to be solid. And I think if you're the Predators, like, if he turns into a perennial 60, 65 point guy, I think you'll take that all day. Like, that's a better version of what you got out of Craig Smith for a long time too. But I don't think he's going to be like some high end flirting with 85, 90 point type guy. I could be wrong, but I think 60s is about where he forecasts to be, which again is fine. Not everybody's a 90 point guy.
No. But the problem is that as you move forward down the road, you know, Tolvanen has been presumed to be one of those key guys. He's locked in there. Fabro has been presumed to be one of those guys that is the next defenseman. Okay, here's another really good top four defenseman for the Preds.
Yep.
And when you don't, and when guys like that don't pan out, now you have to go out and you have to pay for guys, which of course in this league you have an actual hard cap. Or obviously you have to make better choices as you draft and develop. And so you can see where, as some of these guys age out, who are their key players now, where there could really be a dip if some of these things don't pan out. And I just thought Tomasino was going to be the counter to, you know, the Tolvanen and Fabro trajectories. And again, he may still be that. It's just that this is a setback I didn't anticipate happening.
Well, and you mentioned making other moves and decisions, like – I've said this a few times. I still believe it. Like, if they felt like Fabro was going to be a guy in the top four, like, they don't make the McDonough move. You can't convince me that they will. I mean, it's just too much money. It's over $6 million that they're now spending for a 33-year-old defenseman. And look, I think it's a good move. I think he's going to be really good. And I really like the Predators' defense heading into this year. And sometimes things like that happen and they fall in your lap. But you can't tell me if they thought that Dante Fabro was a legitimate top four guy that they would go out and do that and spend that type of money. So that's why I still contend when you start talking about some of these decisions, I don't think there's – I shouldn't say anyway. I would be very surprised if we're sitting here this time next year and both Alex Carrier and Dante Fabro are still on the team. Like, I think one of them will be. I don't think both of them will be. I just don't think there's a spot for both of them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah. So, yeah, there's always a corresponding move, and especially if you're what the Preds are and for the foreseeable future will be, which is there's a high, high value put on making the playoffs. You know, and we can get into the – we don't have time right now – into the value of making the playoffs versus value of trying to, you know, trying to reset your core more than they have. But bottom line is you just need some of these young guys to really pan out. It's great to get a surprise. I mean, I guess you can look at it as, you know, and say, now there's a surprise story that you didn't have as a story. So he makes up for one of these. But you need the guys that you have pegged as – they're going to be key down the road, that you need them to live up to that, and there's too much of that not happening right now.
I came out with my preseason predictions yesterday on Preds Insiders, and we'll get to some of that coming up tomorrow as well here on the show as the regular season officially gets underway. I will give you one of them, though, Joe Rexroad.
Uh-oh.
UC Saros, Vezina Trophy winner this year. He wins it. Gets her done this year.
Listen to me now. I swear to you on this. This is the truth, okay? I had to do like a predictions thing for The Athletic.
Yeah.
I swear it's already written. We may be of like mind, okay? So don't get mad at me. Don't get mad at me for copying you.
Okay. All right.
Maybe I think you may have mentioned it before, though, so I subconsciously may have copied you.
Well, it just makes sense. He's been a nominee. He was third place last year. I think they're going to be much better defensively this year. I think he's going to put up some pretty good numbers. I think he's going to play a lot.
Well, and that's the thing. If their decor, if they're going to be solidified like they might be, like the hope is, when you sign a McDonough, right? If that's going to, and then now you feel you, like your third pairing isn't some disaster. Oh my God, get him off the ice, right? Well, what does that mean for his numbers? I think it probably means quite a bit.
And he's had pretty good numbers anyway without it, so it means very good thing. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Titans coming up next. What are some key questions that we still have about the Titans? What have we learned about the Titans thus far through what is almost, as Joe Rexroad has pointed out, the quarter mark of the season? We'll get into that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, The Game. Tune into this Sunday's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5-106.3 The Game. This week's game will feature the Dallas Cowboys taking on the LA Rams at 325. NFL Games of the Week brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Superbook Sports. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5-106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Looking ahead to the Titans and the Washington Commanders coming up on Sunday. And Joe, as you pointed out, after the first quarter of that game will actually be the technical quarter of the way through the season for the Titans as they take on the Commanders. So maybe we should just stop things after the first quarter and reevaluate coming up on Sunday. But you come out with a piece at The Athletic taking a look at some key questions and some key answers that we've learned thus far about the Tennessee Titans. What are some of those key questions that we've thrown out there about the Titans through four games thus far with a record of 2-2?
Well, of course, I asked you some earlier, including, you know, are they better or worse than you expected? MVP, breakout player, top rookie. We both agree on key player who needs to improve. I think Austin Hooper is just the investment, the expectation, just the the anticipation that we had after watching him. At least I know, like, I wasn't on an island on this one with Austin Hooper. Like, they were planning to use him a lot in the offense. They haven't yet. Is Vrabel on the hot seat? I love that one. Where is he, by the way, on the
look.
Vegas odds right now? Is he up to like second, third most likely to be fired? I mean, it's pretty amazing stuff, man.
Are he and Frank Reich still at the same odds? I'd be interested to know that.
God, it's really amazing. You know, playoff contender or not, and I think you and I both agree on that, right? I mean, this is as clunky as things have been, and as good as the Jags look. But by the way, Todd from Jacksonville tweeting at me with all his excitement. He's wondering where Indy Ben has been lately. I have not heard from Indy Ben lately. I'm a little bit concerned about Indy Ben.
Now, in fairness, our text line is down right now, so maybe we've heard from him today. But it's been a minute.
That's a good point. Maybe today was supposed to be the triumphant return of Indy Ben, all excited about tonight's big one out in Denver. And the text line has well, if that's the case, hey, Indy Ben, you got the number, man. You can call us.
Just call in.
Yeah, you can call us. But they are a playoff contender. I mean, it still is a pretty bad division. I do think that the Jaguars are possibly pretty good. I'm not ready to shovel dirt on the Colts. But regardless, yes, the Titans are a playoff contender. I mean, the Titans are probably – I mean, are they the favorite right now? They'd be my pick now to win the AFC South. Yeah, I'd have to be – they'd be my pick to win the AFC South. So for all that has gone wrong, that's – pretty good, I guess, to be in that spot after a quarter of the season almost.
Well, the interesting question to me that I think I would love to know how Titans fans feel about it. Are they better, the same, or worse than you expected that they would be? Because I went through this earlier. Like, from a record standpoint, even though the route's been different, I had them at 2-2 through four games to begin the season. I thought that they'd beat the Giants and they'd beat the Colts. They'd lose to the Bills. And they'd lose to the Raiders as well. And that didn't happen. They lost to the Giants, they lost to the Bills, and then they beat the Raiders and the Colts. So it's a different path to get there, and obviously the Bills game was very, very bad and very, very ugly. But they are 2-2 through the first four games of the year. I would still answer the question, Joe. I just feel like they've looked a little bit worse than I thought they would. And I think injuries are a big part of that as well. But, you know, we've talked about it. You know, when you're playing – Terrence Mitchell out there as your second cornerback position, or Taylor Lewan goes down, you know, the first snap of the second game of the year, there are things that have happened. Harold Landry, you know, we talked about that too, that have derailed, I think, probably the ceiling of what this team can be. But I'd be interested to know, like, if you're a Titans fan, have they been better, worse, the same than you thought they would be thus far through four games?
Yeah, and for me, I had them 2-2 now. Now, the difference for me is, obviously, I mean, Giants win, Bills loss. I had them beating the Raiders and then losing to the Colts because, you know, I was a believer in the Colts. I picked the Colts to win the AFC South. Probably just because I just love Chris Ballard. There's just something about that guy when he screams F-bombs in your ear and smashes the table in the press box when he's angry at a call. That made me just feel like, you know what, that guy's just amazing. I'm picking the Colts.
Well, I think you also used the comparison of Matt Ryan to Peyton Manning as well. I think you were bought into that one, too.
Okay, in all seriousness, and I don't – who wrote that supposedly, according to Jared?
I never saw accurate? I never saw the Matt Ryan-Peyton Manning comparison.
So he will never – yeah, I mean, for anybody who heard our argument with Jared or Meyer with Jared earlier, I mean – look, I understand if you're a total homer like he is with the Titans and you think that people who cover other teams are homers, but I got to see that, Jared. Provide me a link, Jared, of someone comparing him to Peyton Manning. Like, actually saying he's, as a player, like if someone said, like, wow, like the leadership, someone threw out Peyton Manning as a comparison. Okay,
you ready for this headline I just found?
Oh, God, here we go.
This is from our good friend Stephen Holder. This is on ESPN.com. The headline is this: demanding excellence, Indianapolis Colts quarterback Matt Ryan is more like Peyton Manning than you'd think. This is from Stephen Holder.
Okay, so again, I was just saying, so if it's like this intangible thing, fine. Okay? Fine. I mean, Peyton Manning, was Peyton Manning a great leader?
I mean, that's still pretty funny.
It is. It is. But, I mean, when Jared said what he said, the suggestion was someone was saying that that Matt Ryan was going to give quarterback play in the realm of Peyton Manning. If Holder said that in the story, well, I can't defend it, but I'll have to read it. Also, by the way, you know, that's not thecolt.com/theathletic.com.
It is not. So.
But whatever. I mean, look, the Colts were overestimated by a lot of people. Let me raise my hand. But I don't think it's like some mystical reasons. I think what they have is they have a lot of players who have been very good in the league, and too many of them right now look like they've been in the league a long time. Maybe that changes, but too many of them just aren't as effective. And then it's totally fair to rip Ballard for not figuring out left tackle. I think more than quarterback, because they're kind of in a tough spot at quarterback. Left tackle, it's bad. And they drafted Raymond out of Central Michigan, and at some point, you know, that may be where they go, but maybe they made a bad choice there too. And of course, people in this town can relate to that.
Well, the other part of this is like determining exactly how good they are. I think we knew heading into the season that the Titans' passing offense was not going to be as prolific in terms of plays down the field without A.J. Brown. Now, we did talk about, you know, in the aggregate of Robert Woods and Treylon Burks and Austin Hooper and all these different pieces that have come in, you know, could it be possible that Tannehill actually has more passing options this year, and could that lead to better success overall? Well, so far, they're throwing for 185 yards a game, and the only teams that are worse than that are the Steelers, who just switched quarterbacks to Kenny Pickett, Marcus Mariota's Atlanta Falcons, the Panthers, the Giants, and the Bears. Those are the only teams in the league that throw the ball for fewer yards than the Titans do thus far. So while Tannehill, I think, has been pretty good for the most part, and certainly I thought he was great in the first half against both Indianapolis and Raiders, save for that last possession against the Colts, where it's another thing. For some reason, we still can't quite nail down, I guess, for Ryan Tannehill that maybe he didn't handle that last drive pretty well, but we'll get a little bit more into that coming up next. But yeah, but the point is, the passing game, it's just not been very productive.
Yeah, and of the four second half, you know, first half, second half contrast, remember, so it's 64-7, right?
Yeah.
So 64-7, and the first, you know, again, second game, just, you know, whatever. They got blown out. But in the first game, they did have a touchdown drive. They had some pretty good offensive possessions against the Giants, including coming down to what should have been the winning field goal. So I put that aside too. Last two games, I think, are very similar. You know, it's 24 points in the first half, none in the second. 24 points in the first half, none in the second. And I do think that there may be one player in particular, you know, who I think it can be most attributed to that, which is me providing a tease for the next segment.
I like that. We'll get to that coming up next as well. By the way, Joe, since I just brought it up a minute ago, like, are we missing something on the last possession of the half for the Titans the other day? Because Tannehill has spoken twice in the aftermath of that, and he doesn't seem to quite agree with our assessment that the wrong decisions were made there.
There's just some things sometimes with him where it's like it's obvious like it's on him, and he just won't take responsibility. I don't know. Because, I mean, look, and I asked him about it yesterday, and he talked through it, and I get what he's saying. But the thing is, even if you do get it, it's a little close for comfort on a spike.
Yeah.
So let's say you get it and you run for a little bit more and you weave around a little bit and then you go down. It's really close for comfort on a spike. That's just bad clock awareness. But I don't know. Yeah, sometimes he just doesn't want to just say, yep, let me take the L on that one.
I will say, though, it was the gift that keeps on giving. Corey Levin trying to run out for that field goal the other day and just falling all over himself was pretty incredible. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We'll have more discussion on the Titans coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is Slingshot Me of Music City. Experience a whole new Nashville with a Polaris Slingshot rental. You can let the amazing views take your breath away as you view the sights as never seen before in an open-aired auto cycle. Get a four-hour rental for only $115 at thegamenashville.com/deals. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, talking Titans. And Joe Rexroad, you talked about in the last segment the stark difference between the Titans in the first half and the Titans in the second half as well. We've talked a lot about being outscored 64-7 in the second half of games thus far this season. And Joe, you said maybe one player in particular that has a lot to do with the difference between the first half and the second half. And who might that player be? What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, talking about Tannehill here with the end of the half, it's a working theory. It's not I can't tell you this definitively, but I do feel like in the last two games, maybe there have been some. Well, in the last game, there were definitely two or three plays. I think it's just as simple as he didn't see something or didn't throw the ball. And I understand how easy it is to go through a game and watch it and say, hey, quarterback, you know, with 280-pound dudes about to smash into you, why didn't you see that over there and just throw the ball? What are you doing, man? I know how easy it is, but I feel like Tannehill was so sharp and aggressive and peak Tannehill in the first half Sunday, and then there were other things that went wrong in those possessions. Don't get me wrong, it's not all on him. But ultimately, I think that it could have been a very different half and it could have been a stress-free ending with just a couple of plays that I don't understand why he didn't make them. So the working hypothesis here is when the Titans build these leads and they're in a position, you know, to win a game, is he being a little bit too cautious because he doesn't want to throw a pick or have a game-changing mistake? I don't know.
It's an interesting question. Like, it's always, I think it's a balance to some degree with every quarterback, but especially when you start talking about quarterbacks that are not named, you know, Rodgers and Brady and Mahomes and Herbert, those guys, you know, you can live with some of the mistakes they make because they just wow you so often. But if you're Tannehill, what's the balance of, you know, you want to take care of the football? We talked all offseason long about how he's got to do a better job of taking care of the football, but also, when there are throws there where you've got to make some tight window throws and let it rip with this wide receiving core, which factors into it as well, it's a little bit more difficult to do with this wide receiving core. What's the balance like there of taking care of the football, but also making sure that you're being aggressive when you need to be? I think that's a tough balance anyway. I think it's a much tougher balance without A.J. Brown as a security blanket there as well for Tannehill.
Yeah, and look, again, I mean, the protection issues, he didn't expect his left tackle to be gone. He didn't expect now moving forward as, you know, the first-round rookie to be gone. Well, he didn't expect A.J. Brown to not be there. So a lot of things have gotten worse around Tannehill. They have not gotten great around Tannehill, certainly from the end of last year to now. I would not say that the Titans have gotten great around him, right, no. Personnel-wise. So, like, overall, I think he's done quite well this year. But maybe they get in another situation like this, you know, maybe it's worth being a little bit more aggressive in spots. It's also then, yeah, the question of, like, who are you throwing to, who's out there. I know that Jared earlier was like, oh, Kyle Phillips, oh, yeah. Well, Kyle Phillips is, you know, was pretty good in the first game, got hurt. That's the big concern with him is can he stay in one piece? But it's when you're this limited offensively, vertically, a good slot receiver to move the chains can be really valuable to you. So that's one thing I'd look at Sunday as maybe something that helps this offense, you know, get a couple more drives that actually do something.
Now, having said all this, like, the Titans to me right now, Joe, and again, I said it yesterday, I'm sticking by it today, not going to find me overlooking the Washington Commanders this week. It's not going to happen. Not just chalking it up as a win. But I will say, you're in a portion of the schedule right now, maybe the last portion of your schedule, where you look at what's coming for the Titans. The Commanders this weekend, I think obviously a very beatable Colts team in a couple of weeks after the bye week. And then the Texans, who have yet to win a game. Like, this is a stretch here if you're the Titans where you need to play your best football, and I think there's a good chance if you do that, your best football improves you to 5-2 through the stretch. And then you get that stretch that we talked about all offseason with the Chiefs, the Broncos, the Packers, and the Bengals, and the Eagles coming up right after that. But, you know, without looking too far ahead down the schedule here and knowing that things can change pretty dramatically before then, this is a window here if you're the Titans where it's good to have Derrick Henry back rolling again. It feels like he's played really well. You know, can you get some guys healthier on the defensive side of the ball? That's going to be very important as they go through the that stretch here. But the Commanders, the Colts, and the Texans coming up, like I feel like if you're the Titans and you play your best football, you should win all three of those games, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, if they do go out and lose Sunday to the Commanders, then that will be a very popular topic, the playing down to the competition topic. My thing is that they have zero reason to be overlooking anyone. So I think the question may be – a better question may be, are they just really not that good? Because I'm not sure right now. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how good they are, how good they can be. I do want to see them with their pass rushers on the field, you know?
That'd be great.
And see them with, like – most of the defenders who are still active and who are on the team, you know, are going to play this season, you know, even after losing Harold Landry, what does that look like? But how can you count on that being consistently the case right now with some of these guys, given how often they're banged up? Real quick, Robbie. So Michelle sent us this in the group text. So it was, I kind of remember that now. So it was Reggie Wayne who made the Peyton Manning comparison, right?
Even better, I guess so.
Okay, so Reggie Wayne played for Peyton Manning, and he's now an assistant coach, and so he made that comparison in terms of leadership. So here's my question. If you are covering that team in that situation, should you write that or no?
Yeah, of course.
Right, but Jared's going to, you know, it's Bobo. Colts, again, this is the Homer Bobo view of media who cover the team he hates.
Joe, real quickly, we got about a minute left. Must win the game tonight for the Colts. What do you think happens tonight on Thursday Night Football between the Colts and Broncos?
You know, I think the Colts are going to win. So call me crazy.
There he goes again.
Again, it must be that Chris Ballard is my buddy. I don't know. It's crazy, I know. They have they've been very good in prime time and Thursday night games. I know they don't have Taylor, but you know what? Nyheim Hines, I think, is a better player than this offense has allowed him to be, and he's going to have to be featured tonight. And I actually, this is maybe the one time that I'll be glad I drafted him. I just feel like they're going to get it done, and I don't like the Broncos. I don't like their coaching. I don't like their offense. They just got smoked by the Raiders. I mean, I think the Colts are going to win.
Indy Joe here on this program. You can catch him again tomorrow coming up at 6 a.m. That does it for us here today. Chase, Willie, and D-May is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.